31, if it is not already a chapter familiar to all of us, it certainly should be. It should be familiar to us who are women, so that we might know a pattern of godliness and usefulness that God gives us for women. And for men, it is certainly a template of the kind of woman we should be praying for and looking for. So we're going to begin our reading at verse 10. Who can find a virtuous woman? For her price is far above rubies. The heart of her husband doth safely trust in her, so that he shall have no need of spoil. She will do him good and not evil all the days of her life. She seeketh wool and flax, and worketh willingly with her hands. She is like the merchant's ships. She bringeth her food from afar. She riseth also while it is yet night, and giveth meat to her household and a portion to her maidens. She considereth the field, excuse me, and buyeth it. And with the fruit of her hands she planteth a vineyard. She girdeth her loins with strength, and strengtheneth her arms. She perceiveth that her merchandise is good. Her candle goeth not out by night. She layeth her hands to the spindle, and her hands hold the distaff. She stretcheth out her hand to the poor. Yea, she reacheth forth her hands to the needy. She is not afraid of the snow for her household, for all her household are clothed with scarlet. She maketh herself coverings of tapestry. Her clothing is silk and purple. Her husband is known in the gates when he sitteth among the elders of the land. She maketh fine linen, and selleth it, and delivereth girdles unto the merchant. Strength and honor are her clothing, and she shall rejoice in time to come. She openeth her mouth with wisdom, and in her tongue is the law of kindness. She looketh well to the ways of her household, and eateth not the bread of idleness. Her children arise up and call her blessed. Her husband also, and he praiseth her. Many daughters have done virtuously, but thou excellest them all. Favor is deceitful, and beauty is vain. But a woman that feareth the Lord, she shall be praised. Give her the fruit of her hands, and let her own works praise her in the gates. One of these days, if it seems fitting, I had done a series on this chapter in New Jersey, and I certainly think it's well worth the time to do that here too. Then we can look at Titus chapter 2 concerning some of the characteristics that men ought to have as well. Let's pray to the Lord, and then we'll get started on our topic. So far in our study of what I would term a biblical way to marriage, we've been considering some of the principles that underlie this way to marriage. We talked about the purpose for marriage, the goals God has on marriage. We talked somewhat about other principles involved, principles of purity and such like things. And then we've moved from the principles to the practical last time. And we began by talking in the first place about prayer. Now, can anyone recall, and you can use your notes if you wish, can anyone recall what some of the things we said about prayer, why it's so important to begin there, and what sorts of things should we be praying about? And you don't have to go in order. Yes? If. Excellent. Remember, we started with the question, if. We shouldn't just assume that marriage is normal for us or that it's appropriate for us. It might not be. And we remember that there's a balance in Scripture, that singleness is described as a gift of God that is to be used by the Lord. So, if. And what were some of the indicators that we talked about concerning how we know God's answer to that question? What were some of the things we look for in God's response to our prayer, if? What are some markers that help us know if we're to be married or not? Okay. I would say we're going to put that under when. Okay? Because we're going to be ready if we're going to get married. We're going to be ready for something else if we're going to be doing something else. So let's stick to the if first.
A desire to be married.
Okay. Now, remember we said there is a tipping point. It isn't just that, it's when what? Does anybody remember? Help out here? Okay, when those desires begin to tip over into temptation. Right? Because remember, we said that these desires are normal. They're God-given things that a lot of people experience somewhat earlier than the time that they're prepared for marriage. What do we say about those desires that are early on? How should we look at them? Like an alarm clock, right? To awaken us to the need to pray and to prepare, that maybe God is beginning to lead us in that direction. But Scripture is very specific about this, that when those desires begin to tip over into temptations, to uncleanness or to dissatisfaction or different kinds of temptations, that's a fairly good indicator that we ought to be praying seriously and thinking seriously about the fact that we ought to marry. Now, I'm not saying desires always turn into temptations. That's the only way you know. You know, that shouldn't have to be. But if these desires are persistent and increasing, you know, if they're beginning to, you know, even conflict with some of the things we're trying to accomplish, those are pretty good indicators that even if we don't get to this point, if these just continue and grow, not the desire for fellowship itself. Remember, that's something that all Christians should be involved in, single or not. Right? It's not good for man to be alone at all. But we're talking about desires toward the opposite gender, particularly for marriage. What other indicators for if? Remember?
Godly counsel.
Good. Godly counsel. You know, how many times others can see what we can't see? All right? So, parents, right? They know us well. They can give good direction. Others who are very close to us can give good direction in this respect. What else? There's some more humorous ones, if you remember. Does this ring a bell? Right? You're kind of sailing along and nothing really appears on the radar screen. All of a sudden, ta-da! You know, and I'm not saying that's normal or that has to be, but it's amazing how often that is. How a certain somebody comes along and maybe we weren't even thinking about courtship, thinking about marriage, and the more we observe this person, get to know this person, get to learn about this person, all kinds of things start going on. Well, I'm not saying that means that person is the one, but when our mind starts going that way, that can be an indication of the ifs. Does anyone else have anything else in your notes about the ifs? We'll leave it at that for now. What about the whens? Okay, we should be praying to be prepared, but what sorts of preparations? We had a whole bunch of things, remember? Many of you contributed things. What are indications of when we ought to be? Okay. So, spiritually ready. If you're not right with the Lord, please don't drag somebody else into your unbelieving mess. Make sure that your relationship with the Lord is the primary focus. Seek ye first the kingdom of God. Now, there are people who are, quite frankly, caught. They have these desires and temptations. They're not assured of their faith. What do they do? Well, Many times God uses actually this vice grip of these kinds of things to bring them to Himself. They realize what their need is, but then they also hopefully will realize their spiritual neediness. And those two things are not mutually exclusive. They ought to collide and move us to the Lord all the quicker. Lord, I need help. I need Thy help. What else?
Financial.
Okay. So, this doesn't mean you have to be wealthy or have all kinds of money in the bank, but you ought to have a reasonable prospect within the time between the beginning of the courtship and marriage to sustain marriage financially. You ought to have employment. You ought to be able to save. You ought to have cultivated good habits with the gifts God gives you. Otherwise, I mean, I don't know if I mentioned this last time, and you know, you don't know what to make of statistics like this, but it is a very commonly reported statistic. Every year it turns out the same thing. The single most frequently cited reason for people divorcing are financial reasons. And that may surprise us. We might think unfaithfulness, we might think incompatibility, whatever. Time and time, every survey that's ever done for the last I don't know how many years, financials at the top of the list. People not agreeing on how to use, when to use, to what extent to use their goods. So that's not insignificant. What else?
Emotional.
Okay. What were you going to say, Michael?
Yeah, on the when. We had mentioned earlier on the possibility that courtships aren't lengthy things, but this would potentially lengthen a courtship to produce a readiness if an individual wasn't ready in those areas, right?
Right. Well, let's address each of these. What's the difference between spiritual and emotional readiness? How would you distinguish the two? Or how would you describe somebody who might be the one and not the other?
Does your spiritual life influence your living, your emotions?
Good. Can somebody describe for me a person who might be spiritually minded, might be truly born again, but not emotionally ready? Just describe what that person might be like.
Well, I guess they might work.
Sorry?
Somebody who's 14.
Okay. That's actually an excellent point. They just don't have the maturity, the life perspective that it's good. So maturity is a big factor, right? What were you going to say, Homer?
Well, I was just going to say that spiritual aspect could be understood in a way, but not applied practically to
right.
the life.
And, right. How many people who aren't born again, they are born again, but they're not very adept at applying what they know, what they are to their circumstances. So you can have people who are very unstable. I think I described someone, I didn't name them, a godly person, to be sure, but, you know, under pressure, when difficulties came, the person emotionally would tend to fall apart. Well, to me, that says some maturing is necessary for this person to handle the responsibilities, the pressures of courtship. There were other things. Janet, you had mentioned some last time. Do you remember what they were? Sorry?
Goals,
right? And I believe you said motivations. Same line of thought. What's this person about? What's the aim? Is it to find somebody I'm mutually compatible with and have a wonderful life together? Is that it? Is that God's goals? Is that worthy of the Lord? Is that worthy to be called a Christian marriage? What motivates us in life, period? Never mind toward marriage. What makes us tick? What are we after? Do we have a kingdom perspective on life, or is it just all about me and him or her or our home, our family, our prosperity, our whatever? So, and I'm sure there's more. The length of time thing, I think Mr. Dodds is bringing up a great point again, that ideally, these things being more or less in place, courtships shouldn't be elongated, okay? Because that only brings temptation many times. But with these things in mind, sometimes those are driving forces to get people to address this stuff. And better to wait before you're married and have more of these things in place than to say, well, I heard that 1 year is about the time we ought to be courting, no more, so time's up, you know.
But shouldn't that be, these things should be in place before courtship starts.
Precisely. And that's what we're talking about.
If you're looking at a timeline and you're saying, well, you know, it would be this.
Yeah. Right.
Somebody starts a little bit too quick.
Precisely. And I think the point is, they do all the time. I mean, how many people don't we know? It's like, well, they're born again. They both love the Lord. And he's got 10 grand in the bank. Let's go. And they go, and time's up. And, you know, the rest is history. And, you know, God is merciful. Sometimes we bump our way along, and these things develop. But I'll tell you, it's not the ideal way to do things at all.
I don't know if I fall under the emotional piece, but I think the preparation in your mind, at least for children, to bring children into this situation and put away hobbies and other things, is there selfishness in there? Because I'll tell you, there's a big part that comes in with people. Suddenly have kids and they realize it's life changing.
Yeah, it might be. So I didn't know if it fell under the emotional, but I'll tell you, putting away childish things.
We've known such people. You know, they still want their night out with the guys. You know, it's like, okay, what's marriage for? Well, it's just another piece of furniture. That's just another car in the garage. This is my wife. You know, the next acquisition in my portfolio of fun things to do. You know, we have to have a sober, I think the way to translate this, a sober assessment of what we're getting into and what that means. I mean, remember we said you are excluding the 4.995 billion people on the earth for this one person when it comes to marriage. Well, let's act like that. Okay? So, these things. So, prayer, you know, and we're talking about ourselves praying. We're talking about our parents praying with us. We want them involved from the get-go. We're going to want their involvement the rest of our lives. Their guidance, their counsel, their prayers. Why would we not want them to be involved in all of this before we even begin courting? And we ought to listen to them when it comes to, especially us guys, we ought to have the humility, if we're thinking about a certain somebody, to talk to our parents and other godly people. What do you think about this person? What do you know about this person? What can you tell me about their family? We shouldn't be flying solo on this at all. You know, this is another, you know, body of Christ situation, right? Where we ought to be using other parts of the body of Christ in these major decisions. Dating sidesteps all of that. Right? Dating is like, I'm going to pick someone I think I like, and voila. Okay, then, what next? Okay, so we've prayed about this. Where do we go from here? And let's talk about the guys and the gals. What now? What happens? Now, generic answers are not allowed. What do we do? Practically speaking, what's the next step?
Where are we at?
Let's just say this is ready to go. We've determined the if. These things, not only from our own opinion of ourselves, but from competent opinions of others, these things seem to be in place. Now what?
Who and where to find the person.
Okay, good. Now, what column should I put that under?
Right in the middle. They both need a who and they both need a where.
Okay, I'm going to put the who here, no, and the where here. How do we answer that first question?
Is that the point that's supposed to write there, a list of must
when exactly?
Before they meet the hoodwink.
Yeah.
Okay. I would suggest that would be a good idea. The Bible doesn't say we have to do such a thing. Some people write their lists a little later than they should, but I've come across that in my lifetime. That gets a little dicey. You know, certain categories start getting contoured, but better late than never. Somebody said what? Scott, thank you. Both columns?
Yeah.
Now, hold on a minute. How do we get to that when we're not even courting yet?
That should be somewhat in family realm situation.
Keep going. You're on a roll. Okay.
Lifestyles.
Okay.
Beliefs.
Good. Bill?
That's spiritually.
Okay. Now, let's get even more specific. How do you do that? How do we arrive at that sense of compatibility before we've actually begun courtship itself? How do we determine some of those very important things before we've actually courted yet?
Through worship and fellowship.
Okay, this is good. Okay, for example, where do these people worship? I had a young man, not a member of any church I've ever pastored. I met him, we became good friends, and we've gone over this together in private. And he said, I would like you to check out the website of the girl that I'm considering courting and tell me what you think of their church. And both of us recognize that there's going to be some challenges if this lady believes what that church teaches. And I was very specific. I said, go to this page, look at that line, go to this page, look at that line. These are some things you're going to want to consider very seriously. And talk through with your parents, with others, to see if that's going to work. So, what else? What are some other ways we can know some of these things ahead of time? So, where these people worship, you know, are we on the same page? Good. So, I'm not asking that you spy on these people. Well, that's not always a bad idea. I can't spell acquaint. Well, the fact is, though, who do these people hang out with? Who are friends of this family's friends? What sorts of things do these people do? And you may have to do some asking. If this is a long-distance relationship, you're not there to see it. That makes it very challenging. But that's an inherent difficulty with long-distance relationships, right? Unless you know the family firsthand, unless you have credible knowledge of this family through mutual friends and whatever, it's going to be very challenging, and you're going to want to know some of these things. Why do you want to know about their family? We talked about this before, remember? Why do you want to know about their family? Problems, that's looking at it somewhat negatively. They're going to carry a lot of things. Some positive, some negative, right? Like what things?
Family traditions, right?
If you are not believing that Christmas ought to be celebrated, and they make a big deal of it, that could end up being a big deal. For example. What else do you want to know about their family, and why do you want to know it?
How they treat the parents.
Okay, habits like?
Something as simple as what they family risers, rape risers, just little things like that can make marriage difficult if you're opposites.
Mm-hmm. Early risers, late risers.
All kinds of little things like that.
Yeah, and there can be lots of bigger things too. How do they look at money? What's their view of entertainment? You know, do they, you know, there's a host of different things you can learn about a person. Now, mind you, and this is a big caution, some people are not like their families. Some people run counter to some of their family's problems. Maybe their family solves problems by yelling and raising their voice and carrying on, whereas this person doesn't. So you can't paint a person entirely by their family. We shouldn't do that. But you can learn a lot of things. You mentioned how they relate to their parents. How does this person relate to authority figures? What's this person's work ethic? What's their track record? So there's a host of things in the family context that can clue us in to at least a semblance of understanding what we might be getting ourselves into. But again, you know, family is not everything, but that family is going to be there. Even if this person's not like their family, that family comes with a package. So you can't avoid what you're finding out, even if this person is somewhat unique to that family and to their negatives. Okay, so you certainly want to try to develop ahead of time, before you start courting. You don't want to be learning these things on the fly. Okay, I'm not saying you can learn all of this stuff ahead of time, but learn as much as you can ahead of time. Because when you do ask someone to court, you're saying something. You're communicating something. You're not saying to them, I'm going to marry you. You are saying to them, I am going to marry you unless things don't pan out. So courtship isn't just, I'm going to the store shopping and trying this out and trying that out. That's dating. Courting is, this is serious. From all that I can ascertain ahead of time, you appear to be at least very possible as someone that we can serve the Lord together with. Okay, so you've done your background check. I like that. What then? Maybe you answered your own question. Why don't you like it?
Annoying.
Now, that's got my interest piqued. What's annoying about it?
They're after something else. And
who's after what? So it's kind of fake. So it's kind of fake.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I don't know why that's
bugs me,
but is that a good thing or is that...
Well, fake things usually should bug us. You know, disingenuous motives are not good motives. So I think the point is we can put ourselves in relative proximity without doing that. You know, because what happens if what you find out is horrendous? Then what? You ease out of your friendship that's fake to begin with? I mean, it gets really disgusting, right?
I was just going to make a point on that, on the background part too, so to speak, is to realize that nobody's perfect. And you may not find 100% of your list.
Oh,
but it doesn't mean you have to throw the person out because they're missing on two of the 100 things you have written down.
For sure. And that's why we have 3 columns. You don't throw the must-have columns out. You might, if you have enough should-haves. There would be nice columns. You could dump them all and it wouldn't...
I missed that class.
Yeah. Well, you got it before, though. You just forget.
Somewhere.
Okay, now what? Let's just say, as much as we can find out through all these different means, looks promising. And this is, you
now
know.
Where we separate the girls and the guys.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Now is where we separate the girls.
Thank
and
you.
Guys.
I hope. Today, not always so. Even in Christian circles, There are girls who make no bones about being the initiator, being the aggressor, all that stuff. You know, there are some very good Christian websites out there. But my chief complaint about them is that you put everybody's description on there. What's the lady supposed to do with the guy's description? Call him up and say, hey, I think you look like the one for me. I mean, so there's that built-in problem. My son, I think I told you, didn't do that for that very reason. First, he didn't like all kinds of infant... I'm sorry?
Simply give her a reason to say yes or no. If you didn't say anything, you know anything about the guy.
Right, but I'm saying some people take it beyond that. It's like, okay, we got apples and oranges, and either side can, you know... Okay, you started this. Go. What do we do now?
Decide.
Your choice.
On the guy's side, it's what we talk about after he's found somebody that he's interested in.
Uh huh. This is relatively, and as far as he can tell, promising.
He already had some decent talks with the father, but now he should go to the father and talk to him.
Now that's interesting. You say that. Why do you say he should have had some decent talks with the father?
Because the dad, as soon as the guy was coming around, should have been talking to him.
Should the guy have been coming around?
Yes, because they have to get to know each other. So the dad had to take it and take it and been around that.
Hmm. So there's a pre-courtship phase, is there? Let's talk about this. I'm just having fun with you, but this is where I find the courtship model gets twisted, bent, fuzzy, confusing. Lots of questions. How do you do this without getting somehow involved? And what does that involved mean? What does it look like? I would like to, before I say another word, open the floor and say, what are there boundaries to this? Should the guy just march up to the dad and say, I'm on a fact-finding mission? No, you know, I'm not going to tell you which door. You know, I mean, how do you do this? Okay, there's mutual friends, there's stuff you can learn about worship, stuff from acquaintances, but how do we go from courting, or I should say, how do we go from no relationship with this family to courtship? What's legit?
The parents' involvement should be really important in that, because they should have realized from knowing their children that their children are interested in being married, because so they know these qualities are there, they know that daughter, son, whoever is interested, uh-huh. And they should be a part of trying to put them in the same circles around each other, just to get to know each other better and see what those ifs look like.
Okay, very good. Okay, now, I'm going to be really kind of, not nasty, but very, I'm going to press you for particulars. I don't want some generic, general answers. Now we've got to get down to the nitty-gritty. What's okay and what's not? Now, you brought up something very interesting. The parents, right, orchestrate opportunities for observation and for more information. Now, I didn't hear you say, okay, Sonny, you can go, you know, we're going to put ourselves, if possible, into situations that will help us. Do you see the power of acting as a family? Parents with a young person, rather than sending Sonny out there, how does Sonny know how to evaluate this from a mature perspective? He might to some extent, but with the benefit of two other minds, or maybe a trusted other friend involved too, whatever, and evaluating a situation as it unfolds together. What did you think? What did you think? Did you notice when? Did you notice how? Do you see that? Yeah.
Because that's our main focal point. And the parents have to act as the reality filter
Okay.
To break down the want and desire that they both have, that one has more of.
Yeah, I think I'm hearing you say the parents inject much needed A, life experience, and B, objectivity. Right? You're standing a step aside and saying, wait a minute. You know, this, you're not emotionally invested in this. They might be, or at least leaning that way. So you can say, stop. We saw. We heard. Did you notice? Right? So excellent point. So there's a power in creating opportunities as a family, as parents with that. Now, are we talking about a girl's parents? You said guys, right? Should be doing this?
Well, I was actually meaning both at that point, I think, as far as, I mean, otherwise, if the parents of a girl just sit there and just completely wait for some other family to be interested in coming out, that seems kind of silly too.
Okay, is it silly? Here's where the rubber hits the road. Should girls' families, if there's been no expression of interest, be creating opportunities for a guy on her radar screen to be put in proximity? I'm not saying yes or no. I'm asking. What do you think about that? Sorry?
There's not biblical examples of that, is there?
No.
Should a girl be having anybody in mind?
That's a good question.
I don't think so. I don't
know. Okay. Why not? I'm not disagreeing with you, but this is important.
The man's supposed to be the leader.
But what are some of the problems if she did?
Well, but she's kind of putting her heart out a little bit here, a little bit there, and so on and so on. Before you know it, she's not going to have a whole heart to give.
And let's just say she starts setting her sights on Mr. A. And God brings Mr. B into the picture. There's a built-in problem.
Protection of A.
Yeah. So I'm going to push back and say it might be practical. It may seem like common sense. I think you're getting into trouble. I do. Because I think Scripture is pretty clear that the initiator should be the guy. And if he's not initiating, what are you doing? And hey, this is as common as the day is long, right? The girl just happens to show up at all these events and stuff. The guy has shown zero interest, but she happens to be there. Her family happens to be there. There happen to be these just out of the blue phone calls or whatever. It's like, wait a minute. Janet?
Well, you were talking about in the other thing about one person who stands out, is that only for men?
The floor is open.
That was my,
go ahead.
That's my experience. One person stood out. And I didn't do anything but pray and maybe tell some of my friends if they were interested.
Okay.
I couldn't help it. I couldn't stop that.
Now, this is good. Okay, this is the benefit of this. Janet was saying, and I don't think you were going out of your way to pigeonhole this guy. It just... It was him? Just checking. I didn't want to go down a road that we shouldn't go down. That's nice, isn't it, to know that? Yeah. So anyway, how about that far? Where maybe somebody does draw the attention of a gal for good reasons, and she makes it a matter of prayer. Okay.
There you're searching for God's guidance.
Right.
Not running ahead.
Thank you. Do you see the difference? This is why this class is so important.
And I think also, as parents of children that are getting in those ages, I think it's wise to associate with people that you could really give your blessing to.
The right opportunities. Now, you would be irresponsible to either send your children or go with your children into venues where there's going to be all kinds of questionable stuff and people. I mean, okay, maybe some nice people hang out there, but maybe a lot of other people do too. And now you start getting, let's just say, a less than mature daughter who starts getting a more than she should interest in somebody she shouldn't, right? So there's a protection angle to parenting even in that. What kind of opportunities and situations do you really want your children to be in? Right? I think we all can agree on that. Part of headship of being fathers is precisely that. Okay? Which is why I'm going to put in another plug for the Heritage Spring Retreat, where you'll find lots of mature, godly, not monkey around people.
But none of their parents.
Huh?
But none of their parents.
We're there. Yes? Okay, let's take that and make it real clear. I don't think we have a contradiction, but you're getting to the fine point. Flesh it out for us.
Well, I was running into a situation here where you said that the girl should not be pursuing a guy.
Right, a guy.
What's that?
A guy.
A guy, yes.
Yes.
So now then we get extrapolated from that that the girl's parents should not be pursuing a guy.
A guy.
So now we are saying that girls' parents should create opportunities to be around a group of guys.
Yes. Well, I didn't say that. Around godly people.
Godly people.
Yes.
But then, if they notice a particular young man they like.
Like Janet did.
Like Janet did. Now you need to stop the association because now you'd be pursuing.
Answer the question.
I think at that point, I wouldn't have a problem just trying to go back to that family's house between services to have dinner and see if there's an interest the other way without the pursuing being my daughter. But can we set up a youth group out there? Do you see anything coming the other way without you necessarily trying to drag it out of them? I don't think there's anything wrong with that. As long as if she expressed interest, or if I thought he was a good young man, it might be wise for you to hope that to happen.
See, now we're getting to the real fine points, right? Somebody want to respond?
I think in the creating of opportunities from a father daughter situation, or from a family daughter situation, from the gal side, in placing your family in opportunities. I would look at it that this is a group of, you know, I'm related to parents, okay, their lifestyles and everything.
Yes.
So I'm going for that as far as the acquaintances go.
Yes.
That they have raised the model of people that I wish to be around.
Okay, but now we've pushed the line a little bit further than that, and that's what we're going to discuss right now. That is, let's just say you as dad, in those group things that you've been promoting, you and your daughter spot somebody who you really think would be a worthy suitor. Do you feel comfortable promoting opportunities to see, as Bill said, if there's interest from the other direction, or do you feel just leave it at this, pray about it, and see if that happens? That's where we're at right now.
I think in that type of situation, that's where your background check comes in as parents.
Which means what? You start checking out the guy?
Okay, if we see that there is a mutual desire.
Yeah, but we're not there. That's the point. That's the step.
Just a daughter.
Yeah. You and the daughter say, hey, Joe Schmo at the youth group, he consistently stands up.
I wouldn't do that aggressively approach the guy.
You wouldn't
do that without a little bit of special interest? I would try to give him special interest, hopefully not having him aware of it.
Now you see how really fine-tuned where even a husband and wife are discussing how that needle turns.
You're going to check him out.
Why?
Because he just don't know yet.
Now, okay, we're going to...
I was told long ago that a guy chases a girl until the girl catches him.
I don't know who told you that, but
sometimes a girl falls down on purpose.
We ask that question.
But now, if we pause this right here, you see, young people, the vested interest we as parents have in seeing that you marry well. Where we're just straining to find how far we can actually go without pushing it.
Hey, Billy, you want to come over?
I've got a lawn job for you. I know you can't do lawns, but there's always a place to dry. Right, go ahead.
I would want to mostly, especially if my daughter came, I think I would do it either my children. Especially, I would certainly go back to number two and ask why all of those questions. I want to know, what is it that you're just seeing? Is it more than blue eyes and a pretty smile?
Yeah.
You know, that's first and foremost. There would have to be some godly reasons. I would think she would say, oh, I think he's a good person. Stands up at youth group. He's a leadership at the youth group. Things like that would be very important for me to try to drag out first.
Now, I think we can all agree, and I mean all of us, and tell me if I'm wrong, that if you're in those settings and there's someone who does seem not just outstanding in themselves, but outstanding, the two of you for whom fit, can't we at least agree that we do this assessment to make sure that that inclination is well grounded, and then do what Janet said. Make it a matter of prayer as parents, and because God knows this. He's the one who makes it happen, right? So whether you take that next step and set up special opportunities or not, I don't think I can stand here and say you should or you shouldn't. That's going to be something you have to, in your own conscience. Some may feel more comfortable than others. At least we can agree to that, right? That if there's that opportunity and we leave it like this, okay, there is this person, it seems to be bound on our heart, but we're not closing our desires around it so that our prayers are not really genuinely open. Lord, if it's thy will, is an open hand. Lord, make it happen. That's another story. Then we've wrapped our desires around something that we don't know if God is giving us. So I would suggest, let's go that far. I think we're all comfortable there. But as soon as we start going beyond that, there's at least a sensitivity we need to be aware of that we might be trying to push the door of providence open just a little. Okay, and I'm not saying you can't maybe do a little something, but you realize that every little extra something you do, you're beginning to up the tendencies to steer something. Alan, what do you want to say?
I'm just curious, because I do not have a clue. What about talking to the guy's parents without taking it off of the guy, but what about communication with the guy's parents?
Who?
How would that work?
Who?
The parents of...
With daughter or not?
No, definitely not. Just parents of parents.
What do you think?
I was going to just bring this up in a different way. Is it, you know, parents notice that another child, and I might be getting off a little bit, but is it though? Let's say a parent has a hope for a young man for his daughter, and a daughter has an expressed interest. Is it okay for you to pursue that as a parent? Now, I think I'm a little different question than what he's asking, but, you know, if a parent approached you and said, you know, we see something, that, is that wrong? Should parents be getting together without either child making an interest? I know his question was, if there was an interest, is it okay for parents? I'm saying, let's say you as a parent think it's a good fit. Should you pursue it?
Did you have a thing, Brian? Did you have something you wanted to say?
No.
Anybody else did? I thought I saw a hand up. Michael?
I'm going to do a little historical analysis. If
please.
You do go back before the 1920s, when you talked about, you know, it was illegal for
right.
Public.
Now talk a little louder.
If you go back before the 1920s, when it was considered illegal for a man or woman to be in company in a public place, it was not suggestive relationship more than just
family.
One at the baker shop or whatever to buy something. And there was the idea of the suitor, which was the male who takes the initiative. Now we're talking about lots of things that you could bring to bear to let the suitor know that he really is the suitor. But ultimately he has to take the initiative, and of course there's the decision process of the acceptability, the compatibility, and of course the young lady has to have that affinity at some point, but the process is gone through channels, so to speak, and all the background checks. You had a community where the parents knew of the reputation of the potential mates. Sometimes now, in this age, it's very, you know, transient. There's not that stability within the community. So these things would probably, of course, you know, Christian believing people would put the highest emphasis on the spiritual readiness and prayer.
Okay. One more comment from the Bible, and then we're going to just pause it right here for 2 weeks. What a place to end it, right? What about the book of Ruth?